Before we begin, I wanted to give a huge shout out to Amazon Music for partnering with us on this episode of Three Techies Banter. But you'll hear more about this later on the episode. Let's get right into today's episode.
Hi, I'm Samiran.
Hi, I'm Nilesh.
Hi, I'm Sheetal. And you're listening to 3TB.
Three Techies Banter.
So today we're going to focus on something called generative AI. Generative AI, which all of us have been talking about. A lot of us have started using it in our day-to-day lives. Give it whatever name you use when you use it. ChatGPT, Bard. I don't know if you're in the world of visuals, then Midjourney or DALL-E. There are so many versions of the generative AI piece that we're talking about. But what's interesting is that when we think about generative AI, often I feel that we confuse it with AI. And I think there is a distinct difference between the two. And maybe it's time to really talk about what generative AI is. And is it as large or is it a small subset of AI as a whole? And honestly, generative AI is really a small subset of AI as a whole, right? It is that subset which can generate content such as text, images, audio, video, which closely resembles human-created content. I was speaking to somebody and they very funnily told me that what is generative AI? It's just plagiarism at large. It is out and out cheating because you've taken everything that every human being has created, put it out there on the net. Now you're reading that, studying that, and throwing out new things, slightly different from what the original said. And we are calling it this massive generative AI piece, but it's really nothing but plagiarism at scale or cheating at scale. We would beat our kids up or at least correct them if they were cheating like this, but we don't seem to be correcting any of the tech companies who are doing this.
I think since you mentioned our kids, I think kids are heavily using ChatGPT, by the way. So I have had those long discussions with my son about what is the original essay to a college application versus ChatGPT stuff and all that. But since you mentioned the setting the context of Gen AI and what it is, or is it, what it is a subset or subset of AI? I think I'll point out to our listeners that we did a good episode on AI, right, some time back. And people should just go back and have a listen. There we actually covered AI in its full glory, what AI meant. So if I had to, really look at ChatGPT, Bard, or whatever, these are essentially, they come way below in the pecking order. There was this whole deep learning stuff, then there was machine learning stuff, then these are actually, like Samiran mentioned, they are large language models, LLM. So they are a very small part of what all AI can do. But, for me, I always like that phrase called Netscape moment, right? So Netscape as a browser was, when it was launched, it actually propelled internet into, our lives, honestly. Before that, it was just academia and, armed forces and stuff like that. I think ChatGPT for me is like a Netscape moment for AI, because no one else was really interacting with AI or AI models of any kind at this scale. You're right, it may be plagiarism at scale, but frankly speaking, it has given the impetus that this particular field needed, and it's all good. Whenever such Netscape moments happen, I think this provides a lot of funding, investment dollars come flow into the space, and it will lead to bigger and better things. So nothing wrong with that.
Interesting that you're saying that, because yes, it's a Netscape moment. Yes, it has got AI into the public eye. But I think it's quite funny because it has created fear at a level which is quite interesting, at least from a consumer point of view, when I'm doing research on AI and things like that. I think there is, I think the West sees it more fearfully than India does at this point in time, which to me is also very interesting. And the other piece is that within India, I think because we have such an abundance of labor, we don't really think AI is going to come and replace us all. Maybe we're blinkered about it, and maybe we don't want to believe that this monster is going to come in and take our jobs. And, you know, with a country which has so much of a young population, we can't afford to have that happening. But it's interesting because it's fairly divisive at one level. Yes, everybody loves it. Everybody's using it. But I have not seen so much of divisiveness on a technology so quickly. I mean, it took us years to figure out what Facebook was doing to us before we kind of had that aha moment and said, oh my God. But by which time it had really gone to a level which was different. I think in the case of generative AI, or especially when you look at ChatGPT and all of the other versions of it, that divisiveness, that fear, that craziness around the conversations has come in much faster than I would have seen otherwise.
So, you know, I kind of see that as a good thing, you know. So, I mean, I'll just kind of have a different perspective here because, so, like Nilesh mentioned, right, this is a Netscape moment. So, the way I look at it is that, you know, search existed before Google came. But, you know, for whatever reason, Google did it. And I keep on thinking the Razorpay founder, you know, he came to a conference and said they were the 47th player in the payment space. But now they are the leader. So even with ChatGPT, you know, so if you go back into the history of generative AI, you know, I mean, 2010, they were just language learning, deep learning algorithms that existed. And, you know, we had BERT and all kinds of other things much before this. But for whatever reason, ChatGPT has caught the fancy of people because maybe it's made it easier. And there have been, in fact, UI UX studies also that are published that said that simple method of putting a text search, you know, makes it so much easier, and you lose that fear of, you know, it's not like as fearful as going into GitHub and writing code. You know, it's just, you just write whatever you found, and it doesn't make any judgments that, you know, you have made a bad question and all that. So it gives you some answer. And, you know, to the point about this divisiveness, I kind of go back to this whole thing about decentralization, right? Is that the fact that people have differing opinions hopefully will keep ChatGPT and LLMs and GenAI on track, because typically you have a very one-dimensional view that, you know, this is going to solve everything. But fortunately, this time around, at least there are enough people talking about the bad things, you know. Earlier, whether it was the internet, whether it was search, you know, this is going to solve everything. Great, great. And Facebook was, oh, you know, it is going to, you know, make the whole world come together. And then you realize that, you know, there were layers and layers under it. So sometimes I think that this whole differing opinions is a good thing. And I think there is enough protest going around on either side, you know. And I think we'll talk about it more, whether it is sustainability, transparency, you know, where are they getting their data from, blah, blah. But I think the fact that we are talking about it so early in its evolution is probably a good thing.
No, I agree with you. That's all I was saying, that it's interesting how quickly it has grabbed attention, and there is so much more awareness. So that's the point I was making, that from Facebook, which took us 20 years to figure out, oh, they are influencing us, and now they're, you know, they're actually working with us on our heads in a subliminal way, and they are influencing our decisions and all of that. I think the awareness around this has come in really quickly. But Samiran, the worry that I have is there is so much fear with that awareness, which is something that needs to be kind of tracked. That's all.
No, true. So I think the fear is definitely there, that, I mean, that age-old fear, you know, that jobs will go away. And I still remember my father-in-law telling me this, is that when they started automating payroll in the Indian Railways, they thought all jobs will go away. And so then there were strikes and all that. And it didn't happen. I come, you know, somehow see this, at least, maybe call me an optimist. But the fact that, I mean, you know, we do this, right? I mean, earlier we used to get our artwork done by, you know, somebody or the other. Now we kind of do it ourselves, and we're trying to explain. I mean, I don't think somebody's job has gone away, but, you know, I think we have just become better at it. And I think we are doing more and more and experimenting more with it. So in that sense, I kind of remain an optimist that, you know, we may have to reskill, we may have to retrain. But yeah, I don't think jobs will go away. But I take your point that the where does all this learning coming into the model itself, that we need to be careful about, you know, that, you know, whose data is going where, who's being misused, blah, blah, stuff.
Since we are on the topic of, you know, setting up the context for Gen AI, I thought it will also be interesting to just quickly, between the three of us, just touch upon how we are using Gen AI. And maybe I can start. So for me, you know, I'm sure now everyone knows about it, but for me, the aha moment or the light bulb moment came when I wrote it was the free ChatGPT, right? ChatGPT 3.5. And a long time back this happened. And I just wrote something. I wanted some information or text about an event that had happened a few months before. And just to be precise, this was regarding W3C bringing out decentralized identity framework, which was a new thing. It is already old now. And I got the response saying that the response was very vague, and it said that my database is limited to September 2021, if I'm not mistaken. And that was the moment I realized that, oh, I didn't know that, you know, the language model was only trained till then. And I was asking it a question which was kind of in future. So that stopped my ChatGPT 3.5 journey. So I had two options, either buy, you know, the ChatGPT 4, which is a paid one. But I have not gone that way. I am using ChatGPT on Bing you know, kind of the whole Microsoft bet of their search and browser taking off with, you know, investment in ChatGPT, I presume must be paying off in some shape or form, because I started using Bing. Honestly, this is not about Bing, but I realized Bing is a decent browser. And I realized, you know, when you see your task manager in your computer, you'll see Chrome hogs up memory like no one's business. So that was my, you know, way of using ChatGPT, and honestly led me to start using Bing. How about you, Sheetal? How are you using?
So for me, it's quite funny. As a researcher, I'm constantly looking at things from that research lens, right? And I was talking to Samiran when the first time I went on to Midjourney, totally inspired by Samiran pushing me and doing something on turtles flying and stuff like that, I remember. The Amul girl was not happening, right? So he was doing Midjourney and I was doing Midjourney. And I realized how much of everything that we are fighting for, right, is all coming through in the sense that it is so biased, that information. It is bizarre. Right. So I remember very early on, and Sabina, and I'm not sure which piece I was doing. Oh, I was doing about this whole
fashion. I think it was fashion tech.
Right. And I was trying to create the cover for fashion tech fashion tech that we were doing. And I realized that every image that popped up had a woman in it. I had to specify.
Yeah, you couldn't get a fashionable man. No way.
You couldn't get a fashionable man. Okay, so here was gender bias straight up happening for you. Okay, so if I did technology, I would only have men. And if I did fashion, I would only have women. The other thing that happened in the fashion tech, we were also talking about how a t-shirt consumes X liters of water, if you remember, right? So I decided that I would use a Midjourney image for my LinkedIn post. And lo and behold, the moment I said t-shirt, I only got masculine t-shirts. It's almost like women are banned from wearing t-shirts, okay? So
amazing, yeah?
I was chatting with Samiran after that saying, it is so amazing that every bias that we're trying to break in the real world gets completely reinforced in the world of AI, because it has picked up all the biases that we have in the past put out.
So Sheetal, this is amazing. You know, I'll just tell you this. This is something I read just about an hour back. So forget about, you know, bias. We talk about 80 or 90% of the AI professionals and researchers are male. So just imagine where the bias is starting. I mean, the people who are putting the building blocks of these things, I'm not saying they may not be doing it consciously, but it's coming through, right? Completely.
You remember we covered this in our AI episode too, where I was telling you that the coders at the back end are men. And if they're white men, then the biases which are all over start to come through. And honestly, Nilesh, 1 year later when I'm using the tools, so I wanted to do these, I create meditations for myself, right? So I thought, okay, very nice. I'm speaking my own meditation. Let me now also add music to my meditation. And when I started to write simple things like meditation, music, etc., I didn't realize that I would only get a certain kind of music, right? I was hoping to get Indian instrumental, stuff like that, which is also very beautiful for meditation, but I didn't. I started getting some amount of Tibetan music. I started getting a little bit of the, you know, Western classical and things like that. And I thought to myself, hey, I better start putting in saying I want the flute and I want this and I want that, because there is no... And it's bizarre because India is known for its meditation and its yoga prowess, but no, the music didn't come out that way. So biases seem to be a big, big thing as far as using these tools is concerned, including generative text. Huh? So even ChatGPT, you can feel the bias if you read it, right? It's written in a certain style.
So no, I think this Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus is very true, because if you remember our whole conversation when we were trying to make t-shirts and I came up with that ridiculous idea of putting a QR code on a t-shirt. and yeah, I mean, you told me how that could be very, very wrong.
Yes.
So yeah. So, I mean, I think we kind of missed talking about, I'm apparently considered to be one of these great thinkers. So I spend a lot of time thinking. So I get a lot of time to try stuff. So I must be one of those few people who actually pays for ChatGPT and Midjourney and all that. But very interesting. So I've been toying with the free version, but the moment you go to the paid version, obviously it kind of ups their game completely because you get access.
Oh, yeah. You pushed me into doing that with Midjourney. Remember, I'm on a paid version now. I'm having so much fun.
So it's very, there's a lot of fun there. But I just want to come from the point of view that it's not a solved problem, you know, in that it's not like ChatGPT gives you everything you need. I mean, I'll just give you this example of the plugins, right? I mean, if you've tried it, that it kind of gives you a way to take plugins. And if you go in there are some 942, 950, 1000 plugins. But you can only install 3 at a time and use it. So, you know, it's not like, you know, there is a laundry list and you can, and it is fairly cumbersome. It doesn't install properly. And a lot of times, so I tried this ridiculous thing of putting our shorts into ChatGPT and generating a story. Okay. So what it does is essentially it tells you this is a story and then it takes you outside to their website. So that's not happening within ChatGPT. So what I realized is that a lot of these plugins are standard tools which have just created connections so that they don't miss the bus. So I think ChatGPT is still kind of, I would say, far, far away from being the de facto standard. And the other thing I have to tell you guys is that if you're using ChatGPT, do use a couple of other ones. So I'll end up asking the same question to ChatGPT and Bard. And I get very, very nuanced answers, I would say different, because if the subject is the same, you know, like who went to the moon first, it'll say the same. But you know, if you're looking for opinions, this thing, you get very different this thing, because I think ChatGPT goes, you know, to Bing and searches, this guy uses Google, and I think just their repositories are separate, data sets are different and all. So very, very interesting that it's definitely not like one size fits all. It's not like ChatGPT's done it all, you know. It should kind of try different things.
So Nilesh, I'm going to kind of sum up this segment of ours by saying, I was speaking to this lady and I asked her saying, what do you think about ChatGPT? And she says, ChatGPT is my executive assistant or a management trainee that I would have hired. It does all the research that I wanted to do, but after that I start the work. So it's really, I think at this point in time, people who kidding themselves to believe that they are getting all the answers that they're getting from generative AI. Need to really wake up and spill the coffee, because there's a long, long way to go till this truly becomes generative AI in the way we want it to. But it's an interesting tool to kind of simplify life, increase productivity, cut out on the crap work, things like that. So it's a nice lazy man's assistant at this point in time. And I think that is where it is. And let's then now kind of go into our next segment, which is really about, while all of us are enjoying using generative AI, are there downsides to generative AI? Everybody knows the upside, so let's not discuss those. Everybody is intelligent enough to know what the upsides are. Let's talk about the downsides and the unknowns in the next segment.
Okay, after setting the context and talking about some of the tools that we three are using when it comes to, Gen AI, I think it is time to kind of jump into the bad of the Gen AI, right? And I want to keep it, why I said bad of Gen AI is because Gen AI, like in previous segment, we said has got that Netscape moment and the scale. AI in general will also have those bads, but Gen AI has really taken it to a scale and, exposed the what can really happen if we keep using AI. So in this segment, we'll touch upon some of those aspects of using AI and what it is doing to maybe natural resources and maybe the social aspects of it. We would also talk a bit about, the state of AI when compared to the big five, or the Amazons, Nvidias, and Googles of the world. Kind of what is the state of AI? What are the companies doing? Who is kind of winning that AI race? So we'll talk a bit about that. So let me start with the first bad aspect of Gen AI. Samiran spoke a bit, I think wrote about it a bit on his LinkedIn page also. And this is that, one ChatGPT query takes like a bottle of water, the usage of water. So what we are trying to say here is that, when these workloads, so essentially Gen AI or LLMs, what it does is you have the model, so you have to train the model, and then there is inference. If you ask me, like Sheetal, you mentioned earlier, right, that it is a lazy man's assistant, is what she mentioned earlier. It is exactly that, because in the initial days of ChatGPT, the stuff that it was churning out, you could actually search it, So I'll take an example. One guy did a fantastic example saying that, I wanted to build an application using ChatGPT. And the guy said, I want to build a very simple hello world with some couple of inputs and outputs, right? And he used ChatGPT to churn out the code in a certain language. And honestly, this code was all the underlying code, which is anywhere available on Stack Overflow and various other coding websites. So you could actually do a search on any of the search engines, including Google, and reach there. Now, why the bad and why the issues are being amplified is that this whole learning, the model creation in the data centers and the drawing of inferences takes up a lot more energy than a pure search. So that our laziness in a way has led to adoption of Gen AI, has led to kind of, increase in usage of resources.
Sorry, Nilesh, I like the way that the comparison is with how many cars can be made. This comparison has to have come from a man, because a woman would have come in and said how many families could have had drinking water. Just making a point.
And you heard which cars, right? 300 plus BMWs and Teslas.
Yeah, boys and their toys.
So water...
now you know where the first step of bias steps in from. Right? Because there is no concern about society or anything. It's about, we could have made 350 Teslas. Really, do we need 350 Teslas? More.
So this is, I have to tell you this joke about metrics. Okay, so like the whole world has a standard metrics, and the joke is about US, right? So I read this somewhere that, they were trying to compute the distance between X and Y points. So everybody had a metric system, right? And for some reason, the US said it is equivalent to 18 walruses lined back to back with each other. I said, why would you give any dimension in walruses? I mean, were they all father walruses? Were they baby walruses? You know, what is the standard walrus? So there's some weirdness there.
Units of measurement, honestly, is a topic for another, you know, podcast itself. But coming back to the bad of it, I think a couple of things come to my mind. First one is obviously the water and energy usage. And then there is transparency, which we can touch upon a bit. And obviously the social aspect, right? But very interestingly enough, what I realized was, it's the bad, like we said, one bottle of water, fresh water per query is crazy. And there are something like 60 million queries happening per day, if I'm not mistaken. So it's a ridiculous amount of resource usage. So there is research going on, you know, which was very interesting, and probably this is the kind of research, some amount of investment should go into, is how do you create an equity-aware geographical load balancing, right? What I mean by equity-aware is that we don't realize that one is there is usage of water and electricity and everything else, but it is happening in the specific data centers, right? So essentially, you're creating inequity in a region which may already be facing challenges due to the data center being there. Now it is just being, amplified due to the ChatGPT. And two factors were quoted in that load balancing paper. One was water usage effectiveness. So basically, how much water is consumed per unit of energy, right? You need energy to cool the data centers and stuff like that. And the water usage effectiveness is very much dependent on the outside temperature. So what is happening is that there are data centers in Arizona, and it's a drought hit area already. The water usage effectiveness is low. More water is needed for per unit of energy that is consumed. While if this particular data center or this workload, AI workload, was shifted to a data center which was in a colder climate, the water usage effectiveness would be higher. The second interesting part is the carbon efficiency, right? So all AWS, Googles have data centers all across the world, but they are not equally carbon efficient. So very simple example was the Google data centers in Finland are way more carbon efficient than Google's data center in Singapore. Now they need data centers all across the world, obviously, to manage the queries and balance their own loads of queries. But this kind of the AI models are not aware of this inequity, right? So the workload is at times heavily biased towards the geography it is arising from. So the whole idea is probably one investment that is needed is how do you balance this whole load. I found it very interesting that there is a lot of water and energy to be saved if these AI models were kind of load balanced.
I think the issue here is that, like we were discussing earlier, people have become more conscious of the fact that they want to get this thing right this time, because we have just kind of got burned by this whole social media usage of data, which was completely under the covers, and nobody knew who was using what for what reason. So there is a lot of interest, and of course research is going on. So there was this bunch of guys from Stanford, MIT, they kind of put together this foundational transparency index. So what they've kind of taken the top 10 Gen AI LLM guys. So other than ChatGPT, there is Big Science, there's Amazon, there's Google. There are a whole bunch of other guys who are doing this. There is Facebook itself, that Llama 2, which is kind of supposed to be more open source, and they've graded it on 130 categories on various things, on external source of data, what method they use, how peer reviewed the model is, blah blah blah, what have you. The bad thing is that none of these models pass the transparency. All of them come below a 50% score in the transparency test. But at least what it does is it is a tool for policymakers to now say that, okay, if you are not doing this, then maybe we need to tweak policies to get that right. So bad news, none of them are transparent. I mean, good news is that we probably know about it now, so maybe we can do something. And the other interesting thing I also kind of found in this whole piece is that while we have been, everybody's been touting the fact that, you know, ChatGPT has captured the imagination of the world and all. If you kind of go back to BrassTech data numbers, which is like, you know, daily average users and, you know, 1 month retention numbers, you will find that the usual suspects, you know, which is the YouTubes, the Instagrams, you know, folks like Tinder, they have a much higher retention rate than ChatGPT, which is kind of by far the highest, and Runway and others are much lower. So while we are able to induce trial, it is still not become the habitual tool of choice still. So, you know, we are still a long way to go. So there is a lot of hype around what it is doing, but it is definitely not become the staple diet, and to the point that people are not still willing to pay for it, which is the next bridge you need to cross. I mean, everybody's paying for, we're happy to try, but not so happy to pay.
So honestly, while these are very large issues that, you know, they're going to cover, but I think closer home, all of the issues that we had with social media are going to continue to remain issues with generative AI if we don't worry about it, right? So misinformation, disinformation is going to continue to happen. And in fact, now that you have access to all of this, you're not even going to check where the source is and you're going to put it out over there. So I think one of the big, big concerns about this is misinformation, disinformation. The other thing is all on privacy, right? I mean, so far, who has questioned what ChatGPT learned on? Should you and I be paid because it read what we put out and is now throwing back at us what we put out? And there is absolutely no conversation. There is some conversation, but there is very little awareness amongst consumers to say that we're very happy with it, but somebody's data has been used and there is absolutely no acknowledgement of that. So data privacy and governance is going to be a fairly large issue as far as this is concerned.
I think, in first section, Samiran also mentioned his optimist view about, this whole usage and awareness has come early. It's good. And I completely share that view, right? And let's say, you know, I mentioned about resources and I said there is research happening about how do you balance it geographically. There is this concern about transparency. And, I told in the first segment that I use ChatGPT on Bing. And Bing, incidentally, that ChatGPT, whatever I search, I get the sources, all sources from where it got. So some amount of transparency you can see is coming in. It may not be at the level we want. Similarly to privacy, you know, I'm not saying it's a huge issue, but the awareness of it is, I think it is there. And, we spoke about it in our AI section about ethical AI and stuff like that, you know. And that awareness, you can see it, right? The stalwarts in the industry, I'll take an example of Twitter itself, right? While Musk may be many things, but one of his crazy ideas of actually making Twitter paid and limiting the number of tweets was one of the reasons was that now no model can scrape, you know, because those are bots who will scrape it, right? You can't have named accounts, paying accounts to scrape a Twitter feed. So those you will curb those bots from scraping the web and creating a model out of it. So I presume we will see some amount of privacy checks being built into websites. I think we have talked about it earlier. Europe with a GDPR, you know, whenever a website opens, you have to go through a GDPR prompt. Literally, I mean, I'm in Ireland. Sometimes it is irritating. Same website has to do it every time you go into that website. website, which means that probably if I'm doing a pure web scraping kind of stuff, how do you bypass these prompts? So it'll be a tussle between, you know, trying to enforce privacy and secure channels while I'm sure models will try to break it.
So I think the ChatGPT probably may have created its own paradox. So just think of this situation, okay? So there is ChatGPT, it's learning from data, okay? And that data is coming from Reddit, Quora, GitHub, and all those open source platforms that had huge amount of information which it's learning from. So now, passage of time, okay? Now people are only going to ChatGPT, not going to Reddit, not going to Quora, not going to GitHub. Now ChatGPT is running out of data to learn. So now what happens? It's kind of a really weird situation, right? You are killing the very thing that is training you. So it's kind of a very weird. So in fact, there is a lot of studies going on that the humanly generated data, we will run out of humanly generated data between 2025 and 2030 to train any of these LLMs now. So it's just like it's kind of a real nutty situation.
No, Samiran, it's not nutty. It's scary, actually, because what you and I are going to land up doing is we are going to be fed what the computers think, and then we'll make that our thinking. That is even crazier. That to me is a scary piece of information.
So Gen AI models are supposed to have something known as a hallucination problem, you know. So it is literally like it answers you in order to please you, literally. So, you know, it will always give you an answer and it need not be true. So there's been number of legal cases of manufactured, legal case studies and manufactured situations, which the tool has given, you have taken as true. And it, in the real world, it doesn't exist. So yeah, it has its own fun things going on.
I like what you said, Samir, and I completely understand, because there will be, you know, there will be a drought of real human ideas from where the model learns. And when you put these checks and balances also, the drought is going to happen, right? And in the end, you have a model which is starved for data. So it is still, you know, the inferences are being drawn from the older stuff. But I think the sources will change. It is going to be a tussle, you know, the sources for learning will probably diversify. Luckily, unlike I'll say the web 2.0, when Facebooks and, you know, social media came over, I think the awareness was lacking, honestly. I agree with Sheetal what you mentioned, you know. This time I don't think the case is like that. So probably we'll move in a right direction faster, sooner, kind of, than later. But I think Gen AI and AI in general is here to stay. On that note, honestly, you know, not just here to say, stay. I read an article recently, and it started off with, the whole cloud and dominance of Amazon and AWS in the cloud world, and how it is literally, the author mentioned that it is a decade behind in something that the author is calling cloud 2.0. Now, cloud 2.0 essentially is a stack for full stack for AI, right? I don't know whether you're aware, Amazon, the reason AWS is what it is, the reason is that they actually manufacture their own chips for the data centers, right? So they started off with obviously using Intel chips, but it is like a huge amount of cost, right? It is almost like a tax you are paying on the money you are making to Intel. And nowadays that tax is literally being called Nvidia tax, by the way. So the winner in this cloud 2.0 world is Nvidia. And what Nvidia tax means is that every time everyone is doing something in that space, Nvidia is getting paid, because the GPUs of Nvidia are being used. And this revelation kind of came almost a decade back, when most of the AI researchers, including Andrew Young, who is one of the foremost researchers in that space, they felt that the GPUs did the parallel processing way better, and that is why GPUs were most suitable for doing Gen AI. And and Nvidia made the best GPUs. They were limited to, you know, gaming and stuff like that. But now this was a new use case which has just exploded. And Nvidia in the last decade has exploited this to the core. So they have created a programming language called CUDA, CUDA. They have libraries, they have compilers, they have the whole stack ready with the chip. And what I read was there are 4 million NVIDIA registered developers. So now think about the stickiness. Who is going to move when you have this kind of a, you know, knowledge base, people, you know, whole stack? Who is going to move anywhere? So cloud 2.0 race, to a certain extent, I think Amazon has already lost that race. They're trying to build their own GPU, by the way, but they are way behind.
Nilesh, on the finance side of this, let me tell you, because NVIDIA stock is supposed to go through the roof. It has, right? They're actually saying that the NVIDIA stock is going to be up amongst the most well-positioned stocks, right? So if you have NVIDIA stock, I think you should hold on to it.
NVIDIA is like Apple, actually, because, I mean, you know, it's impossible to get out of a hardware lock. I mean, in the sense, you know, it's much more kind of controlling, or what, I mean, it's very difficult to get out and change it. And basically, they have a huge influence right now. I mean, it's not an end consumer thing, right? I mean, everybody who's building cloud is building it on NVIDIA. So, I mean, that's the end of that.
The interesting was, you know, in GPUs, and I was informed of GPUs by my son, who is into gaming. I was not so well aware. So there are primarily two players that you would hear of, let's say 10 years back. Obviously, one was NVIDIA and other was AMD, right? So AMD also does great GPUs. Intel has integrated GPUs, so they couldn't exploit it to that extent, right, in the gaming world. So there is this company which started using, you said about this lock, right? They started with AMD. Today, they, even if they want, they can't move to NVIDIA, right? It's the whole thing. You have the stack, you have investments. How do you move out of it? So, but the pitch from Amazon is finally going to be faster, cheaper, simpler kind of stuff, right? And they recently invested $4 billion in a company called Anthropic, if I'm not mistaken. Anthropic has created a model called Claude, right? And they are building a chip called Trainium, which is a GPU. And they're hoping that they'll make it so cheap, like they did it in cloud world, the whole AWS and hosting became cheap. They'll make it so cheap that there will be a reason for you to move. But yeah, I think stickiness is NVIDIA is far ahead in this game right now.
I think when the moment this comes to India, Jio will make on $1 chip now, and that will be the end of the world.
No, but you know, Mr. Ambani has taken that challenge, right? Sam Altman's challenge of building a chat GPT in India. Honestly, we can. And I'm sure our LLM would be way L than any LLM.
Jio Mere Lal is going to be my end note on this episode.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Three Techies Banter. Just wanted to say a big thank you to Amazon Music once again for partnering with us on this episode of the podcast.